and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. From escalation to escalation, Israel's pagers attack on Hezbollah and other Lebanese citizens may be a prelude to a greater conflict in the region. With Israel failing in Gaza and its economy distressed, does Netanyahu plan to force an American intervention? Crosstalking escalation, I'm joined by my guest, Joshua Landis in Oklahoma City. He is director of the Middle East Studies Program at the University of Oklahoma. In Berlin, we have Kavirk Amasan. He is founder of Syriana Analysis. And in Beirut, we cross to Gadi Francis. She is a journalist and war correspondent. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Joshua, thank you very much for joining us. I know it's very early for you. In reflecting upon over the last couple of days, this tech terrorism, if we can call it that, in Lebanon, obviously at the hands of the Israelis here, what is the message that's being sent? Because like everyone else on this program and our viewers, I scour every kind of opinion, and the opinions are very diverse in trying to interpret what's going on here. What's your take? Go ahead.
Well, this is a major blow to Hezbollah. There's no doubt about it, and to the resistance axis in general. Hamas is known for being a well-run and well-oiled machine that was able to force Israel to leave Lebanon in 2000 after a long resistance. It's seen as being very good at what it does, and also in 2006, it was able to send rockets into Israel right through the entire engagement. But this makes Hezbollah look very weak, and it's going to hurt its reputation as a resistance organization. You know, the technological difference between Israel and Hezbollah is, you know, it made me think of white settlers in the United States giving blankets with smallpox on it to the Native Americans. It was the gap between these two fighting forces is tremendous. And this reminds us of the technological superiority, the F-35s and so forth, that Israel has and is able to use throughout the Arab world and the Islamic world. And this skews the balance of power in the favor of Israel tremendously, despite the numbers and the best efforts of its neighbors.
Well, Kavirk, let me go to you in Berlin. I mean, is this a tactic or is this a strategy or is it somehow both? Go ahead.
It depends. It depends what Israel intended on doing. If this was a strategic, and that means Israel wanted to compromise the internal communication system of Hezbollah, was Israel successful in doing so? It's very early to judge if they were successful in completely compromising the internal communication system, especially between the headquarters and the senior officers and the junior officers on the ground. The indication since the attack, this pager attack on Lebanon, is that Hezbollah has not been deterred, and the missiles and the rockets and the operations, the drone attacks, are still ongoing. Now, I agree with Dr. Joshua that Israel has a technological and a superiority over Hezbollah. However, the tolerance of the grassroots of the community of Hezbollah is way higher than the Israeli community. And in this case, the casualty rate, if Hezbollah now retaliates in a harsh way, which I still suspect that they will do it, if they retaliate, however, and this is going to cause a major blow also for the Israeli society, because the Israeli society is also tired of this conflict, and they cannot really continue emptying the settlements in northern Palestine and moving all the population to the south. And if Hezbollah now enlarges the scope of the bombing, then Israel will be forced to evacuate more settlers from northern Palestine to other places, and this will increase the pressure on Israel itself. So we have to also see what is going to be the speech of Nasrallah, which is important to see that what he's going to say and what are they intending on doing in against Israel.
Gadi, let me go to you in Beirut. I mean, as horrific as this, it's an act of terrorism. Obviously, civilians were involved. It wasn't targeted whatsoever. A child has been killed. People in the medical profession. All of this. It's an act of terror. But does it really change the equation here? Because just as Kavok just pointed out, I mean, in northern Israel, there's still people that are displaced. They're in the south. I mean, nothing has really changed. I mean, if anything, it's more of a psychological blow at this point. Go ahead.
First of all, let me thank you, Peter, for noting that it's a terror attack. I was wondering if something similar happened to white settlers that Dr. Landis referred to. If something similar, if any technological civilian used device was turned into a bomb with bystanders, doctors, children, all sorts of civilians being hit, would he consider it a technological superiority or would he say it's a terrorist attack? It's only too far into this genocide in Palestine that we are not really sitting back here and trying to be politically correct. It is a terrorist attack on civilians. And we have to clarify here, just for the context, Peter, and for everyone who will see that, not everyone who's affiliated with Hezbollah is a combatant. There were MPs, there were doctors, there were scouts,
there was an ambassador even.
And children, exactly. So not everyone is a combatant. This is why I debunked the whole narrative that this says anything superior in terms of warfare, because the people who are fighting Israel in the south were not hurt. The combatants were not hurt. Who were hurt were people affiliated with Hezbollah and people standing next to them in the Lebanese community. And we have to take into consideration that the Lebanese community and the Lebanese voters did vote for Hezbollah members of parliament to represent them. And the Lebanese community showed a tremendous act of solidarity throughout the days of these attacks. And also recorded and reported, Hezbollah has more than tens of thousands of combatants. If that hit really affected several thousands, it did not really deter Hezbollah or their missiles or their capacity. And one more thing we have to say, given the point that Kevork from Berlin just stated, the tremendous act of resilience and the tolerance in our communities, we have to note that in the 77 years of this struggle, the indigenous people versus the colonizers, we never had similar technology. They always used their planes to bomb our tents. They always used to have superiority in technological warfare and in military warfare
well,
in general.
We have to point out, too, that the Houthi have basically defeated the U.S. Navy. So I get your point here. Joshua, we had the Israeli Defense Minister Gallant. This is a quote here. The center of gravity is shifting to the north through diversion of forces and resources. This was a day before the Pagers attack. Put these two together.
Well, it's quite clear that the Netanyahu government has been trying to escalate this conflict to include Lebanon and to include Iran, most importantly for Netanyahu. And he has America at a point of great weakness because of the election campaign. Both candidates are competing with each other to be more pro-Israel than the next. And this means that Netanyahu is able, may calculate that he's able to escalate and get the United States to help him destroy not only Hezbollah, but perhaps to attack Iran. Now, the United States does not want to get drawn into this kind of a conflict, particularly in the middle of a campaign, which will divert attention away from the issues that the Democratic Party is trying to focus on, to issues of whether it's too one-sided in the war in Israel and whether this, in fact, helps America's foreign policy, hurts it, whether America is standing up for universal values and human rights and civilians. It is going to distort, it's going to hurt America badly. But Netanyahu feels that he has the advantage. Of course, we know that this is good for his own government, which is trying to push through a conquest of the West Bank and to destroy Palestinian claims to an independent state. And that's his ambition. It's his life's work.
Yep.
And it is a legacy that he, at the age of 70, I don't know exactly how old he is, but getting to the end of his political tenure, wants to complete a life's work of trying to conquer the remaining parts.
Yeah, well, he might also end up being the last leader of a Zionist regime as well. Kvoda, I mean, I keep hearing this. The U.S. doesn't want to go to war, but if Netanyahu wants the U.S. to go to war, it will go to war. I mean, it's very frustrating hearing this. Go ahead, in Berlin.
I mean, if I was the national security advisor for the president of the United States, which doesn't exist at the current moment, I would advise strongly against going into war in West Asia or in the Middle East. The priority of the United States has to be, if from the American point of view, to pivot to the East to try to counter the rise of China and also to try to draw a rift between Russia and Europe. However, with Netanyahu, as Professor also Joshua Landes mentioned, he has enormous influence nowadays over the foreign policy approach of the U.S. And if Netanyahu triggers a regional war vis-a-vis against Hezbollah, Syria, the Ansarullah, and against Iran, the United States has no choice but to intervene. And they will intervene. Nobody has to have the illusion that if Israel triggers a war, that the Americans will say, no, this time we are not going to come and in support of the Americans. No, the Americans will supply the Israelis whatever they need in order to fight this fight. Therefore, I don't see nowadays a difference between the foreign policy approach in Washington and the foreign policy of Tel Aviv, because it's the foreign policy of the U.S. has been hijacked by Netanyahu. And as you mentioned, Netanyahu also wants a legacy here. He wants to end his legacy with some sort of complete annihilation of the Palestinian statehood and the Palestinian demand for state. And therefore, this also pushes the Palestinians and also the Arabs all around the Arabic world into not accepting Israel's legitimacy at all. And the Arabs nowadays say, and I'm speaking about the grassroots, about the people, that we don't accept the legitimacy of the political entity of Israel, and we want one state solution that the Palestinians, the Arabs, the Jews and the Christians can live alongside each other. And I don't see that this is very
unreasonable thing to ask. We're going to go to a break here. Netanyahu may have his wishes and hopes, but there's a lot of people in the region that can veto that. I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion about escalation in Lebanon. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the escalation in Lebanon. Okay, I want to go back to our guest in Beirut. Gadi, it's really quite remarkable if we look at the entire history of the state of Israel and its foreign policy, and it's always to divide its neighbors. And it's been remarkably successful in doing that. But things are changing right now. When I first spoke to you on this program, we were talking about this terrorist event against a largely civilian population. I'm sure some maybe members of Hezbollah were injured or even killed. But this was not directed at one person. And the reason why I bring that up is that when the whole world sees this kind of activity, if you don't know if your pager is going to work, you have to be afraid of your phone. You don't know if you can turn on a radio. I mean, that unites Shia, Sunni, seculars, atheists. I mean, this is something that brings everybody together. That is absolutely gut-wrenching wrong. Okay, when we look at talking about Hezbollah, I appreciate your points about, okay, this was a huge blow, it'll have to be rectified, but it doesn't change the balance of forces. If a conflict happens, it's going to be a mass casualty event for everybody, and it won't just be for Lebanon. Lebanon knows punishment, but the Israelis don't. Go ahead in Beirut.
Well, first of all, in introducing, we don't consider Israel a neighbor. We consider it a colony, an occupation, an illegal settlement in the Middle East. My grandmother is even older than that state. And when we speak about their tremendous victories in crushing the West Bank, this is also narrated, and the nomenclature could be different. We are talking about their victory in their war crimes in genociding and annihilating a total indigenous native population of all sects, of all religions, and they are the Palestinian people. So what Israel does around its existence has always been crimes and war crimes. The only difference and margin now is that it is being televised. it only occurs to me a tweet that I read yesterday on X. Someone wrote from the United States of America, we could get to a point where Israelis would put Palestinians in gas chambers and televise that and live cover that, and we would find the U.S. State Department finding excuses and waiting for an investigation. This is very blunt and realistic in what's happening today. We are still talking about what Netanyahu's purposes are, and given the fact that this is a war crime against all humanity, everybody using technology. This is the same that has been happening for the past year, since October 7th. And I just want to say something that still, after 11 months, 12 months into attacking, ongoing attacks in Gaza, using all kinds, tons of ammunition and impunity, till date, till that moment, Netanyahu was not able to deter Hamas. He was able to densely populated places were bombed and killing of people happened. But really, did he get to actual Hamas resistance fighter? Did he stop the Khan Yunis and all these areas inside Gaza from firing rockets into Israeli settlements and into Israeli bases? No. So when we're talking about Hezbollah, given all the facts that Dr. Landis stated in the beginning of this episode, from 2006. And also you have to add that this is a group, this is an armed group in the Middle East that has never been defeated in any kind of ground invasion. There is no history recorded of a defeat for Hezbollah. So I don't think Netanyahu can do anything in a ground invasion. And I think this was already, this attack happened just to give a sense of achievement and accomplishment to the Israeli millions that don't want him in position anymore, because he couldn't free any hostages. Yeah. On the contrary, he ended up killing many of them. And he didn't really deter Hamas. And he didn't really do anything of his so-called purposes. As for the West Bank, we are still seeing also a resistance inside, all kinds of resistance inside Palestine. There's also the lone wolf kind of operations. I think it would be really underestimating the battle if we really say that Netanyahu can actually end up accomplishing anything. He's bullying the Americans. Yep. Because he is an American colony. He's bullying the Americans using the AIPAC money to continue supporting him until the presidential election.
You're absolutely right. He can cajole, blackmail, pay off all he wants. But if we can go back to Oklahoma City, Joshua, is it going to work? I mean, we can play this game of bluffing and chicken and all that. But I mean, if Israel wants to have a conflict with Hezbollah, it will pay a very heavy price. I mean, they have those missiles for a reason. You can have an American aircraft carrier there and all its F-16s and all that, but they're not going to be able to catch all of those missiles. This is what makes it so very dangerous.
Well, you're right, Peter. And the real question, it seems to me, is whether there is any possibility for Palestinian self-determination in the long run. And is there a possibility that the European and American communities will ever pressure Israel to withdraw from the West Bank? Now, we just heard Crown Prince Salman MBS say that he would never recognize Israel unless there's a Palestinian state. And this has become the rhetoric of the Gulf nations today, which many people see as a boost to the Palestinians. On the other hand, the trade figures belie this. The trade between the Gulf states and Israel has increased fairly dramatically over the last few years. And Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Libya are all in shambles. Their economies are in shambles. And and Israel is going right. It is crushing the Palestinians, and that's what's happening in Gaza. Now, this brings us back to this narrative of that has been common in the Middle East, which is of the Crusades, that the Crusaders lasted for 200 years, but eventually there was a Salah ad-Din. Yep. The Arabs got unified and they pushed them out. And this has been the rhetoric and the hope of many Arabs in the Middle East.
But don't you think, Joshua,
this operation today?
That's exactly where I wanted to go. Let me go to in Berlin. This is what makes this interesting in a way and extremely dangerous, because there are two major meta narratives right here for the Israelis and the Zionist project. This is their opportunity to solve all problems all at the same time. Of course, the United States are supposed to do it for them. But just as Joshua was saying as well, is that now you having a region that has been so sliced and diced by Western imperialism, but now they are coalescing. So we have two major meta approaches to this conflict. Go ahead.
Two, 3 decades ago, if you told me that the people of the region, and especially the anti-American camp, can seriously challenge American dominance in the region, I would have told you this is a joke. And we're speaking about, especially also after the invasion of Iraq. But nowadays, the situation has changed. And the countries in the Gulf, those who are talking about two-state solution, I think they're trying to save Israel from its problems nowadays, because many people also in the region, they started to say that because before that we always discussed whether Israel has the right to exist. Now people say, does Israel have the right, has the legitimacy or deserve to exist after what it has done to the Palestinians? And history shows us that no nation has committed a genocide of this gratitude and ethnic cleansing in the past, and on the long run, sustained and continued. So Israel has two choices: to either dismantle its radical Zionist ideology, and this eventually will lead to one state solution and everybody coexisting, or Netanyahu government has to be humbled through a military conflict. And I don't see that the first option is possible under the current circumstances. Therefore, we are headed to an escalation. And we have to mention something important. The Lebanese government, the foreign minister, for example, was playing the mediator role between the Western powers and Hezbollah, trying to de-escalate the situation. And the foreign minister said now, after this attack in Lebanon, that they cannot urge Hezbollah to de-escalate and not to retaliate and respond against this terrorist attack against the Lebanese people. Therefore, even the limitations which were set because of social pressure, popular pressure, and from the Lebanese government are all gone now. So if Hezbollah goes into retaliatory actions, they will enjoy popular support from the Lebanese and also from the officials in the Lebanese government, something that the Israelis have done because of this very, I would say, terrorist attack against the Lebanese people.
You know, it's interesting that I've heard over the last few months, Israel needs to be humbled, it needs to learn a lesson. Gadi, if I can go to you in Beirut, I don't understand, the Zionism doesn't function that way. It's winner take all. There is no compromise. And Israel, in this, where it is right now, is its own worst enemy because it's playing for broke. But everybody else in the region is too. Go ahead.
Well, since somebody here thinks white supremacy is still going and we cannot really defeat the colonizers because we are less important and less, and since somebody doesn't care that children are being killed if they're not white and colonizers, let me say that an Israeli, a Jewish writer, wrote a book from Oxford University. I have it in my library. I read it every day. I like to read it, and its title. It's called Israel, the Threat from Within. And this person, he's a Jewish person, he went and he stayed since 2014 for a couple of years. He used to be a columnist in The Economist. And he wrote exactly why he thinks Israel is going to end itself by itself, because the hegemony does not really work. Just like you stated, Peter, you can always remember and say the things that you like to listen to, but you cannot really change the fact that these people, these underdogs, these indigenous people are not really illiterate. They have cyber attacks. They have a drone. They called it the Hoopo. It was able to go and take footages of more than 10 military bases of the Israelis and come back intact to Lebanon and air it in a psychological warfare. This is unprecedented in the history of this struggle. The capacity and the ability of the axis of the resistance in Yemen to deter million-dollar trades with $100-made missiles is there. This is a fact. Yes, you can say that the economy is better in the United States. Of course, it's better in the United States than it is in Libya or Iran. But you can also say that Iran makes its own weapons and gives it to countless countries in the Middle East. And you can also not look at Salah al-Din and go back to the Arabs, because we're not only Arabs in this region, we are Levantine. We can go back to the recent history, just what happened in the Kabul airport few years ago when the Americans exited Afghanistan without actually doing anything or winning anything.
Well, we've run out of time, but I haven't heard Salah al-Din mentioned for a long time, but maybe that's a good thing now. All right, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Beirut, Berlin, and in Oklahoma City. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk rules.